The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Live from the Nasdaq Market Site overlooking New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. I'm Melissa Lee. Tonight's trader lineup, Guy Adami, Tim Seymour, Nadine Turman, and Jeff Mills. Tonight on Fast, buckle up. We are putting the pedal to the metal on the EV trade. Three big headlines, moving three big stocks today. We'll break down who's really winning the EV race. Plus, buy the dip. Tim is making the case for a beaten down name today. He'll take the mound with a fast pitch, and later, scam, reckless, a raging dumpster fire. Those are just some of the words used in a scathing short seller report on medical technology company Berkeley Lights. The stock is down another 11% today. It is in, by the way, Cathie Wood's ARK ETF. We'll speak with that short seller coming up. We start off tonight with a big sign of strength for the consumer. Retail sales posting a surprise gain in August, shrugging off Delta variant concerns as well as supply chain issues. And take a look at the action today's session. Retail names checking out some big gains. Gap, Macy's, Nordstrom, more ending the day in the green. And don't look now, but there's just 100 days left to go until Christmas. So with this countdown on, I'm counting down. Should you be betting on retail going into the holiday season? I'll let Guy absorb this and go to Jeff Mills. What do you think?
Wow, I get to go before Guy. I'm honored. Listen, I think it's generally good news. We've been wanting to position more cyclically here. I think the number clearly much better than expected. I think bears could point to certain elements of the number that maybe weren't as good as the headline might suggest, sort of a shifting of sales back to online, away from services. But again, you see a shifting of the direction of spending, but the demand and the spending is still there. So overall, I think that's very good news. I think consumers still have excess savings. I think they're in a good position. The labor market continues to heal. All of that points to solid fundamentals for a lot of these companies going into the holiday season. And I think generally, I've been saying it for a while, I think if you're positioning for this growth scare narrative that I think is still going on, I think you're probably too late at this point. You've seen copper correct. You've seen oil correct. We've seen yields go down and then come back up. So I think you still want to be in this value cyclical area of the market, but be careful because I do think as we head into next year, you want to be in quality names. I think these high beta names that sort of popped off the bottom, probably not the best place to be. So I think about the Targets, the Nikes of the world, high free cash flow yields. Those are the kind of companies I want to target right now.
Those are, by the way, the companies, Tim, that also have a very strong online presence. So this shift is almost, it almost doesn't make a difference for a lot of these names that Jeff had mentioned. A lot of ones that we showed on the screen, a Macy's, a Gap, that have really improved their online service during the pandemic. And so even if there is a shift back indoors for any reason, they're there.
Well, the question is Santa Claus already come to town? Because I think for a bunch of these companies, you know, whether you're, yes, I did do that. Whether it's Macy's or Nordstrom's or Gap, these are companies that needed to heal and really were on the land of misfit toys. Yeah, I did that too. And I think what they've done over the last 12 to 15 months through COVID, but, you know, turnarounds that were accelerated by COVID, they moved to a more digital presence. They were able to restructure leases and terrible real estate positioning. They were able to really get their inventory dynamics down, and they were really able to find a place where there was loyalty and the incremental dollar was coming from digital. You had Macy's today who gave third quarter guide. They upped their third quarter guide. So what they delivered after the second quarter numbers, and you saw a number of the houses around the street follow through with upgrades. Question is, you know, how much of that is in the price back to then a Target or a Costco or a Walmart? Look, Target, what they've been able to do in the last 12 to 20 months has been all about the curbside pickup, recurring sales, higher ticket sales. And with Walmart, it's about merchandise and where they're moving a little bit or hoping to move to, again, more merchandise out of food and, you know, kind of the commodities and big box dominant sales that they've had so far. I love Walmart here. I think Target has been a beast. It's slowed recently, and Costco's at the top of its game. So I think those are the places I feel most comfortable going into year end, whereas I think a lot of the specialty retail has had such a strong run that I think we've priced in a lot.
Yeah, I mean, what happened today also, Nadine, home builders are very strong. And so you have that aspect of the retail strength story as well. So in what stocks do you think Santa Claus has not yet come to town? What stock isn't pricing in the strength?
Well, Mel, I'd agree here with Jeff and Tim. And in fact, Tim even hinted at one of my names here, and we call them the two B's. You've got brands and beasts. So you want brands like Nike, Lululemon. Obviously, they should continue with strength. And then you've got the beasts, people who can control their supply chains a little bit better. You heard about Costco, Target, Walmart. They're going to be able to control some of that pricing pressure and delivery of actual goods, which is going to be important because if you don't have the goods on your shelf, you can't sell it.
Guy, I deviated from tradition by not going to you first because I was hoping that the other panelists would deliver a myriad of Christmas analogies, metaphors, etc., that would just drive you nuts. But here we are.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on retail here in the 100 days until Christmas?
You were successful. I mean, you were so successful. I mean, you let me fester for you, you Adams Family fans out there. You let me fester in this 6 minutes of just hearing mistletoe and the Grinch, and all. It makes me crazy. It's like 90 degrees outside. I don't want to hear about the holiday season until at least November. That being said, let's look at some of these trades at work. I've learned three things. How long have we been doing this show now, Mel? It's about 15 years. I've learned a myriad of things, three of which I will share with you. Do not fight a land war in Asia. I actually learned that on this show. There are no meaningful baseball games in Flushing in the month of September. I learned that as well. And the third thing I learned is never bet against the U.S. consumer, ever. How do you play it? Well, the logical place is the retailers that they mentioned, but I'll deviate a bit and say American Express. Now, I know you're going to say they're levered to travel. You are correct. But you know what? I think that's in the price right now. The stock has sold off from that 179 high. Got an upgrade today, I believe, at Bank America from underperformed to neutral. It's just a matter of time before they go to a buy. 16 times is cheap. I think you buy American Express into this ho-ho-ho holiday season.
I like what you did there. Tim, but Guy brings up an interesting notion, and that is the competition that retail has in terms of where consumers spend their money when they've been locked down for so long. And travel sort of came and went over the summer. I mean, fizzled because of the Delta variant. But could we see that pickup, and could we see travel and other sort of entertainment be a competition for retailers?
I think that there's been a major itch scratched, and while, you know, Guy sees Heat Miser out there, I see Snow Miser. I think you've got folks that are going to settle into the holiday season, and I think they're going to be spending. So while I've pointed out that I think you've priced in a lot, I think the numbers this holiday season are going to set records because of some of the dynamics Jeff talked about in terms of where the consumer is, where they are flush, where they have jobs, and where they've been handed free money for the last 2 years. So I guess, you know, my view is that you want to stay with the retailers that also have the ability to, and Nadine referred to this, get the advantage of price inflation. Remember, CPI is ultimately, and what can be passed on, especially in the form of food inflation and whatnot, is very good for retailers. It's actually very good for Walmart. So I'm not as concerned at the reopening trade or hospitality or experiential things are going to distract from the consumer buying stuff. And I think this is one last hurrah before they hunker down. Be careful about normalized earnings, because I think we're going to start to hear about that as we get through this third quarter.
Not to be grinchy, but I'll be grinchy. How about supply chain disruptions? This would be sales denied, presumably, Jeff Mills. I mean, you're not going to say to your kid, sorry, it's on a container ship in China. I'll get you your present in a month. I mean, you're going to buy something else.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And that continues to be an overhang to this entire story. But I do think relative to the demand, the supply will at least be there enough so these companies can meet the targets that they've set forth, and if not, beat them. So it's clearly an issue. But I think you have this wall of worry kind of across the market, honestly, you know, whether you're talking about the Fed or the policy that's going to come down in Washington or whatever the case may be. So you have this narrative that, yes, there are tailwinds, but all of these things. And I understand that. And people are sort of bracing for more volatility. And you've seen some of these retail names trade sideways or come back a little bit, I think, in anticipation of some of that. So I think it's just as likely that these names climb that wall of worry and continue to perform pretty well into the end of the year.
We haven't mentioned the Fed. We haven't mentioned Jay Powell. We haven't mentioned the possibility that he can announce taper, Guy. Is he going to be the Grinch here when it comes to the markets?
Well, you know, in my opinion, he's been the Grinch since October 2018, but that's another story. You know, I'm just going to posit this. I'm not sure how to spell posit, but I'll do it anyway, Mel. Think about this. What did we talk about last week? That Rosengrens and Kaplan, right? Then they announced that they were going to get out of their holdings. It would be really interesting if that announcement, if it somehow delays, and stay with me on this one, delays any taper talk, because think about people like me in a week or 2 weeks from now and the Fed announces a taper. What's the first thing I'm going to say? See, they got out of their positions right before the announcement. So they have to be very aware of that. With all that said, they're way behind. They're probably 5 years behind the curve on that one. Is he going to be the Grinch? There are many. I don't think he'll be one of them.
All right. Our next guest says, despite signs of strength for the consumer, investors are still betting on a big breakdown in the market. Let's bring in Mandy Su of Credit Suisse. Mandy, great to see you.
Hey. Hey, Melissa. It's great to be on the show.
What are you seeing in the derivatives market that makes you believe this?
So I would say, you know, you guys mentioned the wall of worry. That is exactly what we're seeing in the options market. So what stands out to us is that even though, you know, we've had what I would characterize as a relatively minor pullback, and even though levels of volatility are still fairly contained, other metrics in the option market are all at extremes. And in particular, the one that we look at very closely is called skew. And what essentially it measures is the relative demand for downside puts versus upside calls. So when that measure is at a high, which it is today, what it tells you is that people are pricing in a lot of downside risk, getting very bearish, putting on a lot of hedges, and not buying a lot of upside calls. And that's exactly what we're seeing. So not only are markets pricing a lot of downside risk, but also very pessimistic about a further upside potential from here going into the year end. So the upside calls are also trading very, very cheap relative to the downside puts.
So where are the greatest opportunities in terms of buying calls or making, you know, bullish bets in the market in certain sectors, Mandy?
Sure. So if you look at kind of where that bullish sentiment has really diminished over the past few months, it's really come from the cyclical sectors. And just to throw some stats out there. So back in April of this year, about half the stocks in the energy sector, we were trading with what we call inverted call skew, which is just a measure of very extreme bullish sentiment, right? A lot of demand for those upside calls. 50% of the stocks in the energy sector back in April were trading with this characteristic. Today, it's 0%. Whereas if you look at, for example, comm services or some more defensive sectors, that bullish sentiment is still, I mean, it's come down a little bit, but it's still very prevalent. So I would say in terms of where expectations have gotten really taken down, where we're seeing the most pessimism, it's very much in the cyclical sectors. And we think it's overdone at this point. So kind of on a risk reward basis, we like looking at upside calls, particularly in energy, industrials and financials, the really cyclical sectors to play a rally into your end.
Hey, Mandy, Tim. So I think what you're also saying is the other side of that. And we've been all week talking about measuring where the weighting of the market is overall and the dominance of mega cap tech. And essentially, that's where people have been hiding out. And of course, hiding out means markets move higher. Do you believe the headline indices can run into some pressure? Because it sounds like the trade you're talking about is the cyclicality that's seen the negative headwind. And that the other side of that is that mega cap tech is something that may be vulnerable if people are actually accelerating their risk.
Sure. So we could see a rotation out of the mega cap techs into the more cyclical sectors. I do think kind of in an environment where cyclicals do well, I think tech would hang in there. So I think on an absolute basis, I think the sector still does well, but on a relative basis, that's when it's going to underperform. And that's kind of what we saw in the first quarter of this year was, you know, tech still did okay. It was just underperforming the cyclical sectors.
And you said taper is not going to be a volatility event. It's going to be a snoozer.
Yeah, so Exactly. So maybe a little contrarian take here, but you know, I think you know if you look at historically what's been a catalyst for volatility, what's been a negative catalyst for market, it's not taper, it's not monetary tightening in itself. It's when that tightening is a surprise. So if you look, for example, in 2013, which was the last time the Fed tapered, really the sell-off came in May of that year, right? That was the first time Bernanke talked about tapering. It caught investors off guard. That's when we had a spike in the VIX, the spike in bond market volatility. But by the time the Fed actually got around to tapering by December of that year, stocks were higher, bond yields were high, so bonds sold off, but stocks did well. Volatility actually came in after the Fed started tapering or finally announced taper. So my point here is that, you know, once it's well anticipated by investors, once it's kind of priced in, it's unlikely to be a catalyst, a volatility catalyst.
Mandy, great to speak with you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Mandy Hsu. Nadine, where do you stand on this sort of contrarian notion that taper is not going to be anything for the markets in the end?
Well, I agree with Mandy. I mean, I think that, sure, you could see a couple day volatility around any of these events, but we agree in that oftentimes tapering can be a non-event in the short to intermediate term if you're looking at the stock market. But instead, we look at options, as you know, Mal, and we see the same sort of, call it put or downside protection being layered on implied volatility premiums, so the protection people are on is getting more expensive. And so there has to be some sort of catalyst for that to unwind, so people to take off the protection and start buying into the cyclicals that she's talking about. But the asymmetry definitely is in the places she said. The only one I would add is the U.S. dollar. That's probably, in my mind, the one of the most juicies. You could see the UUP, which is the ETF, declining from here. So you could actually short that or buy put protection on it and probably make a little bit more asymmetric money on it.
Guy, if we do see a bid for the cyclical sectors like the financials, for instance, are the overall markets going to have a rough go of it?
It's interesting you mentioned that. We talked about that last night, right? Yes is the short answer, because if the banks do well, I would imagine it's because rates are going higher. And all the banks are important. They're not nearly as big enough to support the broader market. So my suggestion would be, or my premise would be, banks going higher would mean rates are going higher, which would mean the stocks that really dragged us higher, the high growth, high valuation names, are going to get whacked. So I think banks can go higher with the broader market going lower. Well done by you, Mel. You pay attention, which is the cheapest thing you can do.
And Tim has raised his hand, so I shall call on Timothy.
Well, I feel like we need to tie this up with, again, a reference back to Christmas shows and whatnot. And it sounded like Mandy thinks that tapering and the fear of that is much like the abominable snowman, who once Hermie fixed that tooth, he was really a nice guy. And he was a non-event. And you know, I feel we have some abominable snowman in our future.
Well done, Tim. Coming up, a raging dumpster fire. Those are the words that sent shares of Berkeley Lights sinking today as a short seller took aim. If you don't know what Berkeley Lights is, you may have exposure to it. It's in Cathie Wood's ARK Innovation ETF. We'll hear from the man behind this report and what he calls a publicly traded scam. But first, our own Tim Seymour stepping up to the mound to throw you his fast pitch. The name, he says, is a total home run investment. And later, stick around for a bonus hour of Fast Money. We're taking your questions, so tweet us and we might just answer you right on the air. Stay tuned.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Buckle up. Three big headlines driving the EV trade today. First up, Lucid Motors zipping higher its AirDream EV, receiving an official EPA range rating of 520 miles on a single charge. That tops its competitors by more than 100 miles. Meanwhile, Ford cementing its name in the space as it begins pre-production of its all-electric F-150 Lightning truck at its Michigan plant. That model set to go on sale next spring. And bringing up the rear, General Motors recommending that Chevy Bolt owners park at least 50 feet away from other vehicles. That's a warning tied to its battery recall. For reference, 50 feet, that's a five-story building or so, about 7.5 Gaiadamis. So who is winning this EV race? It's interesting. They don't comment about what happens to the driver inside. They're just saying just park far away from other cars to save the other cars, I guess. But I don't know. Guy, what do you think here? Who's winning the EV race?
Well, I don't know who's winning, but I tell you what stock I think might be poised to win. I think it's Ford. And, you know, we've talked about Jim Farley a number of times. And if you look at the chart, this downtrend from the middle of June has been broken, I think. And just in terms of valuation, you know, they're going to earn $1.90 a share. You talk, put a 10 multiple on it, you have a $19 stock. I think they're probably best suited. Now, GM is as well. But your point about five-story building, I mean, that's sort of, you know, a leap of five-story building, but I ain't parking my car five stories away. I mean, think about where we live. Nobody has 50 feet to park anything away. It's crazy. It's madness. So letter F to me gets it done. I think it should trade higher. I think 19 is the target.
I mean, I guess you can do that if you're living on a prairie or something like that. But, you know, you might not be driving that Bolt. Jeff Mills, you know, in the mix of this conversation is the notion that Tesla's not the only game in town. Ford's not the only. I mean, Rivian, this massive IPO, is on the horizon. That's a company that is partly backed by Ford as well as Amazon. I mean, there are other ways to play this space.
There are. And I think that's been the knock against Tesla for a little while, that this competition was coming. And now I think you're actually starting to see it. So I've been wrong on Tesla for a long time, but I do think that that's a potential headwind to further price appreciation there. The GM story is a little ridiculous, but I do think companies like GM and Ford have a big opportunity here. We've talked about GM for a long time, their $35 billion spending commitment over the next 5 years. I mean, this is a massive opportunity, and they're putting their money where their mouth is. And I think at 8x, it's probably too cheap right here. And just to go back to Tesla for a second, obviously GM is not Tesla, and Tesla has a head start and advantage in all kinds of different areas. But when you're talking about a stock like GM, $80 billion market value versus stock like Tesla at a $400 billion market value, that gap is probably going to close. So after the GM sell-off, I still want to own it here.
Tim?
The Chevy Bolt is nowhere on the radar screen of GM's forward-looking both EM and Ultium battery and their technology and autonomous analysis. It's meaningless. It's a cash cost here, and clearly for a company that's been focused also on free cash flow and running a very efficient business and being profitable, that's disappointing. But look, I think the Chevy Bolt is an inferior product, and it's not what GM's hanging their head on and where the technology for the future is. And I think GM's talked about the commitment they've made and the amount of money that they've thrown at it. And it's actually dwarfed Ford. I'm long Ford and GM. And I think Ford's news today is where they continue to pepper the headlines out there, where they're combining the concept of EV and investment with the most certainly profitable car in North America and arguably one of the most popular, if not the most popular car in North America. Those are great headlines. That's a company that obviously is moving in the right direction. But I know you'd expect me to say this about the Bolt, so I'm not listening to that. It doesn't really mean a lot to me.
All right. We're just getting started here on Fast Money. Here's what's coming up next.
Batter up. Jim is throwing some heat on a name he says is a total home run investment. That fast pitch is next. Plus, the short seller behind a scathing report that sent Berkeley Lights sinking joins us next. We've got that and a lot more when Fast Money returns.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. This mining stock was the worst performer in the S&P 500 today, down more than 6%. But Tim says by the pullback, he's stepping up to the mound to deliver his fast pitch. So, Tim, take it away.
Yeah, we're talking about Freeport-McMoRan. As you noted, bad day today, down 25% from the highs. We've been talking about this story, and I want to remind folks there's three reasons why this company is very different and even better positioned than it was in the go-go days of 2005 through 8 when the resources trade was alive and well. So let's go back there. This company in 2007, its best year of free cash flow, earned $4.7 billion or so in 2007, had about about $3 billion in CapEx needs. And that was at about a $3.90 a pound copper price. What this company's going to do this year, if you listen to JP Morgan, they're going to do $5.7 billion in free cash flow. Next year, they're going to do $7 billion in free cash flow. So almost a 20% free cash flow yield. This is a company that is a free cash flow machine and has a C-suite that's incented along those lines. The second story here really is the story around the macro, which is that copper prices are moving higher. I know it's been a challenging run for some headline commodity prices. Copper's off the highs, but copper has averaged close to $4 a pound this year, and analysts are way behind in terms of where their copper assumptions are and where they're pricing the copper strip curve in companies like Freeport-Mac. The reality is that the infrastructure build out, the infrastructure bill, EV, we just talked about this, is copper heavy. And I think copper supply demand dynamics very much in favor of copper prices moving higher. And finally, the gold and copper ramping of this company, their operations are about as good as they've been. They're actually increasing production levels. So this is a company that if you look at it on next year EV EBITDA, it's trading less than 4x. And I know you don't buy commodity companies. I say this all the time when they're cheap. So buy them when they're giving you almost a 20% free cash flow yield next year. And their CapEx is not growing. Their CapEx is probably shrinking. And again, they're not growing at all costs. Freeport, to me, is a better run company than it's ever been. And it's never generated more free cash flow.
Nadine has a question for Tim. Nadine?
Yes, Tim, indeed. I agree with you, but one of the things I'm trying to get my arms around is this, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on how you incorporate it into your analysis, is that we agree that the macro is so important. So if you have, say, China selling some of their copper reserves, or a lot of news that cyclicals won't be as strong because growth is decelerating, how do you incorporate that versus saying copper prices are high? We need the money flows, the liquidity to be going into these materials stocks, which might be more of a factor issue than a pricing of copper issue. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think these are trades, not investments for most people. And if you look at the weightings of the resource stocks in the indices, they've been inconsequential for years. So you can get frustrated here. And that's why I think investors that are patient here and go to sleep at night with a balance sheet that's as good as it's been in a long time. And again, just back to the copper price assumptions. Copper is priced in most of these models around 350, 340. I was going through a bunch of the numbers. JP Morgan is significantly below $4 a pound. You don't need to be at 430 a pound, 440 a pound, which is where I think we're going to see the kind of free cash flow generation. I think the multiples we're talking about, nobody's saying copper has to hold these levels, even though I think it will.
All right, no more questions. It is time to vote. Are you buying Tim's fast pitch on FCX? Jeff Mills, what do you say?
So I alluded to this earlier, but this is a market where you want to avoid value traps. So quality, quality, quality. Tim said it multiple times. High free cash flow yield. Those are the kind of companies you want to own in value. I think this is one of them. So I would be a buyer. And this is not a whiteboard, Kevin. This is the back of a white envelope. I'm sorry.
Kevin being our executive producer, for those who aren't on the inside of the Fast Money staffing game here. Nadine, what do you say?
I do have my whiteboard. There's my copper. So I would buy Freeport here. I think you could get it at 33.60. It would be preferable. That's the low end of our trading range. But I agree with Tim. It should appreciate over time, especially if Mandy's right and cyclicals pop up.
Guy, I don't know if you have a return monitor there, but actually Nadine said CU, which I give her extra credit for. Nicely done there, Nadine.
Yeah, nice.
Guy, what do you say?
Well done. Mel, what do they call when people blow up your phone when they send it? What do they call that?
Blowing up your phone.
Blowing up your phone. So could you read the smart board for me, please, if you may?
Melms, what is up with hashtag smooth hair? It looks good to me.
Apparently, Tim Seymour's got some hair thing going. I mean, literally, my phone is blowing.
Really?
It's the craziest thing. So I'd like you to answer
what's going on?
I'm sure his hair looks spectacular. I don't know. It's hard for me to say. I don't have a return to Mel's point. But what I will say is Tim is spot on with this one. It's actually bounced off 32 a couple times. I think sort of some of the energy exposure has been dragging on this name. But if you look at Alcoa, U.S. Steel, some of its peers, I would say, those stocks are breaking out. I think FCX does as well. Downgraded recently by Credit Suisse. I think they're wrong. Well job. Good job by Tim. Hair notwithstanding.
I mean, I don't know if it was the pitch or the hair, but you got three votes, Tim, here on the panel. The traders have spoken.
It's the hair.
But it is now your turn out there. Are you buying Tim's fast pitch on Freeport-McMoRan? Do you just like his hair tonight? Vote in our Twitter poll at CNBC Fast Money. We will reveal the results later on in the show. Coming up, we're going to have a food fight. Shares of Chipotle and Beyond Meat heading in opposite directions. We'll tell you what's driving the moves. But first, the man behind the scathing report that sent shares of Berkeley Lights sinking today, why he is calling this stock a publicly traded scam, and how Berkeley Lights is firing back. The details when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out shares of Berkeley Lights plunging a whopping 11% today, adding to yesterday's 19% drop. This after activist short seller firm Scorpion Capital yesterday published a scathing note on the biotech company, calling it a publicly traded scam and a quote-unquote raging dumpster fire with a defective flagship product and no ability to survive. Berkeley Lights is also, by the way, the 40th largest holding in Cathie Wood's flagship ARK Innovation ETF. Joining us now is one of the authors of that report, Scorpion Capital founder Keir Colon. Keir, great to have you back with us.
It's great to be back, Melissa. Thank you.
It sounds like a lot of this report is based on interviews with former employees. How do we know that these employees aren't disgruntled and that they have the latest information with the company if they no longer work there?
So the report is partly based on interviews of former employees, but actually the heart of the report, Melissa, is we talked to 14 of Berkeley Lights' largest customers. The company sells a laboratory instrument that's used for screening cells. The use case is drug development. The customers are large pharmaceutical and biotech companies. So, you know, the most important thing to verify as part of the research was what do customers think about the product? So we talked about 7X employees. We talked to 14 large customers. These are not, you know, rinky-dink customers. We talked to Amgen. We talked to Bristol-Myers. You know, we talked to, you know, Takeda, AbbVie, Novartis. You can just go down the list. And the feedback from all 14 customers was extremely negative. They told us that the product, which is overpriced to begin with, at a shocking $2 million, but the product basically doesn't work. It doesn't do what it purports to do. And in many cases, they've just mothballed it. They don't even use it after spending $2 million, which is extremely damning information. And that was actually confirmed by the former employees that we talked to. And we're very careful to screen for the former employees that we speak with. Occasionally, you can have employees that are disgruntled, but we talk to former executives. You know, these are extremely credible people. We verify that information by talking to many different ex-employees. And, you know, in this case, the information was very consistent from employee to employee, mm-hmm. from customer to customer. So we're very confident that the findings are correct.
But, Keri, what strikes me is that, you know, you've talked to all these major customers. You're basically saying that some of the largest pharma and biotech companies out there got fleeced by this company. They got taken, that they paid for a product that doesn't work. They paid lots of money, and there's no recourse. We haven't heard anything about it. They haven't gone back to the company and said, we want a refund. I mean, they just bought it, doesn't work, stick in a closet and move on?
That's exactly what happened. We think they actually did get fleeced. So you have to understand, you know, how these large pharmaceutical companies work, right? If you have a company with a $100 billion market cap, they basically have an infinite budget. You know, you have a company with, prominent venture capitalists behind it, and people get dazzled by the promise of a new technology. And, you know, if you think a product can help you develop a drug that, you know, could drive $10 billion in sales, what do you care if you got and you spent $2 million? So you buy a machine, you know, some executive got sucked into the vision, and the scientists and the users day-to-day realize that it actually doesn't do what it's supposed to do. And, you know, some of the interesting feedback that we got was exactly that kind of a dynamic where there's somebody, you know, at a higher level of the company who got seduced by the promise of the technology, but the people that actually have to use it, they resist using it.
Hey, Keir, it's Guy. I appreciate your work and coming on.
Thank you. Yeah, I was just going to say, in some cases, you know, there are customers that we've heard who actually did return the product. And one of the questions that we actually asked all 14 of the customers that we interviewed was, would you send the product back if you could? And a number of them actually said that they would. They just didn't bother because they didn't think they'd get the money back.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'm not looking to necessarily comment, but BTIG apparently spoke to gruntled customers. There actually is such a thing, as you know. And they reiterated, I think, a $65 price target. Can you sort of speak to that? Because it clearly flies in the face of some of the things you're saying. I'm not suggesting you're wrong or they're right. It's just interesting that on the same day they make pretty much the opposite comments.
I haven't seen the report, so I don't know which customers they've talked to. I don't know if they're large customers or small customers. You know, one has to be very careful. You know, if you look at the customer testimonials page on Berkeley Lights website, it's a huge red flag because they only list four customers. And, you know, two of those customers look like they're too small to even be able to afford a $2 million product. So we think they got the product for free. So then they go out and they say positive things. Of those four customers, only one of those is actually even a pharmaceutical and biotech company. You know, where are the customer testimonials from, you know, Pfizer, Novartis, Bristol Myers Squibb, all these marquee customers that they have? Why aren't they on the customer testimonials page, you know, saying positive things? So, you know, we talked to a very comprehensive set of customers. There's always some user in some company. You know, you may have, you know, some sort of a positive experience with the technology. There are some one-off, you know, use cases where people pay $2 million for the machine, you know, to try to get some use out of it. So they find some kind of experiment that they can run, you know, some sort of low-value assay, but it's not really why they went out and they spent $2 million. But, you know, let's just step back for a moment. Let me just make kind of one very important high-level observation about this company. So if you're in the stock, there's basically one question that you need to be asking yourself. You know, this is a company that trades at 20 times sales, right? It's valued like a growth stock. Yesterday morning, before we published our report, it was trading at 27 times sales. Product sales are basically flat over the last four quarters. They're basically flat over the last 2 years, yet it has a growth stock multiple. They started selling this product in 2016, right? They placed 92 of these systems, 92, over 5 years, and they say they have a $23 billion TAM.
Right.
So the elephant in the room is $23 billion TAM. It's a game-changing technology. It's been on the market for 5 years. Why do you only have 92 machines in the field?
Interesting point there. I mean, some might say pandemic had something to do with that. But here's my last question here, and that is what position do you have in the stock? How are you expressing your short position? And have you covered any of that position since the stock started falling yesterday when you published the report?
There are a number of ways that we express a bearish view. You know, we're short the stock. You know, we sometimes try to buy puts. We don't comment on day-to-day trading activities, but you know, what I will say is this is a core long-term holding for us. This is a very high conviction short. It's a large position. You know, when I was on a few months ago, we talked about QuantumScape. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still a core short for us. So we don't publish research. We don't put our name behind an idea unless it's something that we think is really convincing and unless we plan to be in it for a while.
All right. Keir, great to speak with you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Cologne of Scorpion Capital. We did just receive a statement in response to this report from Berkeley Lights. They tell us, we have strong and continued confidence in our business, technology, customer relationships, and the value we deliver. The Berkeley Lights technology enables our customers to find the biology that cures disease. The report from Scorpion, a self-proclaimed short seller, contains highly misleading statements, groundless claims, and a clear lack of industry understanding. It is important to note that Scorpion never reached out to us prior to the publication of their report. We believe the sole purpose of the report was to serve the short seller's interests at the expense of Berkeley Lights shareholders. Berkeley Lights is well positioned to continue to drive customer success, execute our business strategy. Obviously, the report, whether or not it's true, the report has had an impact on the stock, Tim. We've run into the situation time and time again. I mean, Kieran mentioned that he was on this show talking about his short of QuantumScape not too long ago as well. We've seen it time and time again. Big report, flashy headline, huge dive in the stock.
short sellers are controversial. It's also the hardest thing to do. And you know, I'll let his reporting and the company's statement and assertions of fact, you know, go toe to toe and let that play out. One of the things I thought was as interesting about his assertion to the downside is also, I think he used the word VC pump, and that the community of folks that have been investing in this, and that this is also symptomatic of broader investing out of the VC clubbiness and the SPAC world. So, you know, part of this, I think, is really also just the dynamic of where there's a lot of froth and misperception and groupthink and group investing that's sometimes self-fulfilling. And I think that that element of this criticism is very interesting and I think has some credence.
All right. Coming up, we are biting into a big food call. Beyond Meat burns out today. We've got the details next. But first, as we head out, CNBC is celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month. All month long, we're spotlighting CNBC contributors, business leaders, and more. Here's Norwegian Cruise Lines President and CEO Frank Del Rio.
Census just came out. We make up 20% of the U.S. population. That means Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Mexicans, Argentinians. We are the melting pot of the United States. And we've been so successful, and we're going to continue being successful because we have ambition. We want to succeed. We believe in education. We believe in hard work. I came to this country as a six-year-old Cuban refugee in 1961, and those were my secrets to success. And they can be yours as well.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Piper Sandler is kind of over Beyond Meat, saying its current all-channel retail momentum lacks consensus expectations while cutting its price target to $95 from $120, and it's rating to an underweight from a neutral. The stock losing more than 2% today. So, Mills, you want to take a bite out of this one?
I'll give it a shot here. Look, this is a stock that I haven't liked for quite some time. I think the chart is still looking kind of rough here. It's pretty important that it holds that $100 level. If it doesn't, I think there's some pretty significant downside. I think, generally speaking, it's part of that high growth story that I really don't like right now. I think those companies are going to ultimately get hit as rates start to drift higher. And I still question the addressable market here, the fact that dietary preferences are going to shift enough to actually justify the current valuation of the stock. I think you've seen some compression in margins lately, so it's still one that I'm going to stay away from.
Yeah. Nadine, how about you?
I agree with Jeff, but I wouldn't short it. The problem is there's high short interest. A lot of this people already know. There's high input costs. People are talking about it. Pepsi just came out and said they're going to have plant-based snacks. So there's just a lot of headlines out there already. A lot of people short this. People are paying up a lot for protection. So this is one of those which is like, yeah, there could be downside, but there's a lot of people already betting that way. So it's kind of a consensus bet already.
Most stocks are plant-based now, unless you're talking about jerky. So much to chew on there, so to speak. Check out shares of AMC, the stock giving up gains into the close. Check out this tweet from the company's CEO, Adam Aron, who wrote, "Cryptocurrency enthusiasts, you likely know AMC Theaters has announced we will accept Bitcoin for online ticket and concession payments by year-end 2021. I can confirm today that when we do, we also expect that we similarly will accept Ethereum, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash." Coming up next hour in a bonus edition of Fast Money, I spoke with Adam Aron. He tells me another way the company is trying to cash in on the crypto craze. He's never talked about this before. That is coming up at the top of the hour. But up next, Merck falling in today's session, but one options trader is betting on a big turnaround for the stock. We've got the details next, and there is still time to vote in our Fast Money poll. Are you buying Tim's fast pitch on Freeport Mac Moran? Vote in our Twitter poll at CNBC Fast Money. The results are in right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out shares of Merck ticking lower, but finishing the day well off session lows when Whale in the options market just made a huge change to their position in this healthcare name. Mike Coe joins us with the action. Hey, Mike.
Hi there. Yeah, so we saw well over 2 times the average daily options volume in Merck and calls significantly outpaced puts. That unusual activity was related to a single trade. Specifically, we saw 15,000 December 75 strike calls trade. Those traded for a little over $1.46. We also saw 15,000 of the 82.5 strike calls trade for slightly under 50 cents, and we also saw 10,000 of the 65 strike puts trade. Now, what was going on here? So the 82.5 strike calls from December actually traded huge blocks back on August 30th. And I think what's going on, we've seen a $6 per share decline in the stock price since that took place. I believe this trader is actually rolling that call strike down. They're now long the 75s. And since a lot of institutional holders of stock will sometimes boost their upside exposure by owning calls, I think they might also be simultaneously hedging a very large equity position with those 65 strike puts, essentially converting their long stock into calls there as well. But this essentially demonstrates continued commitment to Merck on the long side for somebody who I believe was already a substantial holder of the stock.
All right, Mike, thanks for that. And we'll see you at the top of the hour for our bonus hour of Fast Money. And by the way, for more options action, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time is a full show. All right, time to find out if you are buying Tim's Fast Pitch on FCX. The results are in. Take a look at that. More than 59% of voters say yes. So it is a home run. If we were allowed to play Tony Braxton, we might play it. Time for the final trade, or actually time for your life. Let's go around the horn. Tim, the winner of this, what do you say? Final trade.
First of all, Tony's a huge fan of the show. I don't know why she's not letting us play that music anymore. But anyway, I'm going to dance with the one that brung us. That would be Freeport Mac. Stay there.
Nadine.
I'm going to go with AYR Strategies. If you can pick it up 20, it's quite the buy.
Jeff Mills.
I like Penn National Gaming here. You know, it's 40% off its highs, now trading at 25 times forward. I think with China hitting all the big casinos, Penn with 100% U.S. revenue exposure, I think it's a good entry point.
Guy Dami.
Mel, if I'm going to spend 20 minutes in the can, it's because of CMG, not BYND. CMG.
Thanks for watching. Whoa. Fast. Don't go anywhere. Bonus hour, Fast Money coming up.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.